of the baby's injuries, and they were pretty bad. The police denied that the photograph actually accurately depicts the injury allegedly sustained. Nonetheless, I mean, this kid was in a medically induced coma for several weeks because it was the kid was just messed up that bad. And yet they're saying that this kid was guilty because it was in a room.
Yes, that's called infantile guilt. It's an automatic form of guilt.
Does it not? I think it's 9 or so ago, there was a, they caught a guy here in off of Magnolia Avenue. He was wanted in Florida, and they went to the door, I think three of them, and the criminal opened the door and shot one of them in a bulletproof vest right in the chest. And then he shut the door real quick, and then he called the SWAT team, and he finally ended up giving himself up. But the guy lived that he shot. They didn't say what kind of caliber, but he lived, and it surprised me they let him live, because usually they get those guys that shoot at a police officer, but they let him come out, and they took him to jail. But that just happened the other night here. Y'all talking about the black crime back about 5 years ago. We had a car hijacking. Several blacks hijacked a man and his girlfriend. They were about 19, 20, thereabouts. They took them to their house and raped them and all this kind of stuff. That these were white people, that they hijacked, took their vehicle. They ended up killing the white guy and pouring gas over him and burning him up and throwing him out there close by. And the woman, they did all kinds of rape to her and all kinds of stuff, and then put the Clorox down her mouth and all kinds of crap they didn't say, tell you about, and then put her down in a trash bag in a trash can and hauled her off. I think they finally found her body. And that trial was a real popular trial here. You probably already heard about it here in Knoxville.
Yes, we won't hear about it up here, though.
Roger, roger. Yeah, I tell you, they all got, none of them got, I can't remember, a couple of them got life. There was a lady involved, and there was about three or four adult black guys, and they were on cocaine and everything else, but that was one of the worst things that's happened around here.
I think it's increasingly plaguing this country, and the media won't really say much about it. That story will never be picked up by the media to such an extent that we would ever hear about it here in New Hampshire.
Hey, Vic?
Yeah?
We can thank Jim Monahan for solving the murder of the American Ironworks CEO, Savas Savopoulos, who was killed with his wife and his son and their housekeeper a week ago.
How was that?
Well, Jim Monahan founded Domino's Pizza. He was, you know, Tom Monahan's brother, but Jim was the one that actually, it was his idea. And, of course, he's a member of the Liberty Net, and I love hearing Jim, even though I don't agree with him on religion a lot of the times, but I do enjoy his comments nonetheless. But the murderer was found because they had delivered a pizza, a Domino's pizza was delivered to the home while the family was being held, and the murderer, Darren Wint, who's a black man, killed the entire family, but he ate pizza. And Wint's DNA was found on the pizza crust, over.
Yes, that's ingenious.
Yeah, so Jim Monahan was indirectly responsible for finding the murderer of American Ironworks CEO Savas Savopoulos.
Yes, little did Jim ever dream that someday his establishment of the pizza outfit would save someone's life by indicting or prosecuting a murderer.
Yeah, I just find it, you know, it is such a small world. I mean, if you look, it's, you know, they have this thing called 7 degrees of separation, and if you look into it, you can find seven steps from one instance to another, you can always sort of link them. Well, in this case, it's just like maybe one or two steps, and that's it. So we're going to have to thank Jim for solving that crime.
Yes, for inventing the company, he has reduced the proliferation of crime in the United States.
And we know that a Jesuit didn't do that.
Yes, was the black man a Jesuit?
I'm not sure, but it's possible. But imagine finding the DNA of this guy on a discarded pizza crust.
Yes, that's very meticulous police work.
Okay, I mean, this guy, Wint, who is the murderer, had previous convictions for sexual assault, theft, weapons possession, and I guess ejected from the Marines. He had a real problem with authority.
Yes, it's amazing how these guys get away with long strings of crime, and they're still out there on the street.
Did you see what the Department of Justice has said about Baltimore and the Ferguson situation?
No. Is this the new Attorney General?
No, this is the head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, Vanita Gupta. And Vanita Gupta, said that this is the direct result of Jim Crow segregation, slavery, black codes, and lynching. This is why Ferguson happened was because, and Baltimore was caused because of that.
In spite of the fact that Baltimore is all black and it's controlled by the blacks and has been run by the blacks for 50 years, they're going to bring in some kind of Jim Crow excuse?
Yeah. Vanita Gupta. That's why I say, Vic, the situation with these people is, liberalism is a mental disorder, and they are absolutely insane. They really are.
Yes, I think they are, too. It's beyond belief, and I think Baltimore proves it better than almost any other place except Chicago.
Yeah, and AWGM, and I'm sure Russ, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, Steve. This is KK4WX.
Yeah, I was just curious. Do you know of any liberals that fish?
Any liberals that fish? That's a strange question. I don't know. I'm not sure I know any liberals. A whole lot of anything there, Steve, but the sponge off of the government, over.
Yeah. I don't think they fish either. Of course, most fishermen are liars, but not all of them, but some of them, a lot of them. just like hunters, you know, deer hunters and stuff like that. So, but for the most part, my brother, he has a bait shop up here in over east of me here. Anyway, he's on a lake there that they do a lot of fishing in that lake. He gets a lot of black customers, and most of them are pretty conservative. They don't a lot of them don't like Obama anymore.
I'm now here too.
A lot of blacks down here that don't like him, and most of them, believe it or not, are the ones at least that I found that. And a lot of people wouldn't think this really, but it is true. There's a pretty good Bible Belt of you know, blacks down here that, you know, they're Christians. For a lot of them, churchgoers, and they don't go for this Obama stuff. All of them. I mean, like I said, there's always that there's always that crowd that, as I said earlier, they're gonna vote for him just because he's black. But now a lot of them, they vote their conservative, if you want to call it Christian roots values. So that's what you get, a lot of that down here. Over.
Into IRJ.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, good evening, Marty. As a matter of fact, I had some statistics that I read one night on the Liberty Net, and it was all the people that voted, all the states that voted conservatively. In other words, they voted for Republican candidates and whatnot versus the Democrats. And, a lot of the states down here in the South were voted, for Republican candidates, as opposed to a lot of them up in the North voted just opposite. Like, take, for example, Maine. They don't have very many blacks at all, and we've got a large population of blacks down here, but yet we voted for the conservative candidate, and they didn't, over.
Yeah, there seems to be a change. I noticed that, for example, a friend of mine, he has Section 8 rental properties. We were doing a lot of renovation of those properties, and a lot of times these people, whether they're white or black for that matter, they go in there and absolutely destroy these houses. We have to go in there and replace just about everything. But that being said, I noticed that there was a lot of support for Obama back when he was first elected in his first term. And then the second time around, there wasn't as much. And nowadays, you mention Obama, and you hear these black folks say, "Oh, that son of a bitch! I can't stand his guts. He's all for the bankers." I mean, they kind of know. They really, a lot of them do. And I find that kind of interesting. The change of heart that is happening here. Anyway, I hear Marty in there. Hello, Marty. N2IRJ, N8WGM, and W1WCR. This is N8WGM.
Hi, Marty.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Vic. On, I think, this Thursday, May 21st, 2015, if I have my head on straight, I think that's the date. It's almost going to be midnight Eastern Standard Time. Wonder how long you've been here, and was there a FlashNet called? I didn't get an email. If so, over.
Marty, I think you're an hour behind. It's 12:58.
Yeah, you're an hour behind, Marty.
Actually not. I said Eastern Standard Time. I don't use Eastern Deceptive Time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, I question for Russ and Vic. First, Russ, did you get my email?
Yes, I did, Marty, and I've been trying to think of a good time to call you and sit down and talk with you a little bit. I'd like to do that there, over.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you can email me back, and we can always keep it open-ended if it's inconvenient for one, you know, just say so, you know, that's fine. And Vic, I was wondering, did you get my email about a physicist's view of what might contribute to cancer?
No, I didn't. I've had trouble with my email. I've replaced my email client with a new one that seems to work, so you may have to resend it.
Uh-huh. I did resend it, so this will be sending number 3, which is fine by me, but I thought you might have seen it by now, and I'll do that. I'll gladly do that. Well, this is a very interesting occurrence. I just happened to come by here on frequency and find you all speaking. My guess is you've been on maybe for a few hours even. Vic, did you call FlashNet?
Hey, Marty?
Yeah, Russ?
I want to ask something since we kind of sparred a little bit back and forth on email a little bit about Vern last Saturday night. I was kind of confused at the topic that he brought up, something like overthinking or something like that. Maybe was he trying to infer or say something about me, or do you know?
None of that comes to mind. I'd have to play back the recording again, but I really don't remember him at all referencing you. For everyone else on frequency, what Russ's email to me about was regarding Vern's poor audio and his poor signal to boot. And people in the chat room were even commenting that they really couldn't hear much what he was saying. And I analyzed it and found that he had virtually no frequency response above 1,800 hertz, and also his signal level was very low, too. It's been this way since he's converted to the K3. It's not like in the old days where he used to have a powerful signal and an audio profile that was pleasing to the ear. In fact, about 20 years ago, Vern worked with me. He wanted feedback, so I would email him and do my usual recordings. And he was using a very expensive microphone, something like $10,000, and he had a ton of professional broadcast equipment from his stations hooked up in the chain there. And he has since done away with that. And I guess he still has his dipole up at a really high point. I want to say 160 feet, but maybe it's not quite that. But I think there are two towers there. And I used to think he was actually overshooting me by having it so high. But I still got him decently, the signal. But anymore, it's been very bad. So Russ was wondering about that. And I did tell Vern that twice over the air. But seemingly, he didn't acknowledge my report, Russ. Over.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what it was. I've heard him much better. He's usually had a real good signal, very loud and very distinct audio. I guess, Dylan, I'm not an audio guru, but I know what I hear and I know what I like. And of course, I can't hear my end, so I have to rely on you guys whether or not I sound okay or not. But I know that some of these newer transceivers, as I was telling you, they have a way of opening up the signal or something, or they open up the sideband signal to wider than 3 kc's. You said, well, 3 kc's, that's what a single sideband signal was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be any wider than that. If it was, it was distorted, or you were overdriving it or something. But some of these newer guys, they do this audio thing and all this stuff, and they want it to sound like FM or something, or AM broadcast, and I don't think you can really get a single sideband signal to sound that way. And as a result, they actually sound like they're growling or something. It's producing a type of signal that is not very pleasant to me. If it's real strong, you can understand them, but if it's not, then they're very difficult to understand. So, but Vern, I'm not saying his was like that, but it did sound like he was, had a lot of lows or something. He didn't have enough highs, and I was having trouble understanding his words for sure. This is KK4WX for ID.
Yeah, my take on it was that it was outright distorted, and I mentioned to him that his audio was bad, but he didn't say very much.
Right, he seemed to be discombobulated. Well, I was going to email him, as I did in the past, but he eventually, he didn't return my emails. And I'd ask him on the air, and he didn't even seem to know what I was talking about. And yet, over the air, he asked for feedback. So, it perplexed me. So far, I haven't contacted him about this problem. He really should know. And on top of that, I didn't mention a couple times he wasn't even on frequency. So, that even added icing to the cake. Russ, I was going to explain this all over the phone, but I could mention it briefly here, the answer to your question. Vern does not have extended and enhanced single sideband. And in fact, he's less than 3 kilohertz wide. He's under 2.4. A typical run-of-the-mill amateur radio is about 2,400 hertz wide. You might get an older one that is made to be, say, 2,700. Maybe you can pop in a custom-made filter for 3,000, and that's just fine. That's sweet. And doing so should not make it sound bad to you at all. However, there are some people that have these modern radios that are able to not only sound as good as an FM station, but actually better. You thought that maybe they were approaching it, but it wasn't possible. It is possible. An AM station is limited to 10,000 kilohertz bandwidth these days on the sidebands by the FCC. And they're also required to have what are called pedestals at the ends. It digitally knocks off the highs. So if you have cymbals or other instruments above that frequency, they can no longer be heard. And also there's an artificiality associated with the cutoff. That's why AM radio has gotten the rap of sounding bad because of that. It's not because AM intrinsically has to be that way. It's because the FCC has forced poor engineering practice upon the land. And secondarily, they have the channels too closely spaced, so there's overlap. And these days, they've allowed a very evil entity to enter the scene on AM radio called IBOC, I-B-O-C. It's an acronym. Supposedly, it means in-band on channel, but what it really translates into in real life is in-band on somebody else's channel. These stations, for example, this WPNT out of Philadelphia, WOR, their studios are in New York City, but their transmitter site is in Hackensack Meadows, Rutherford, New Jersey. They have IBOC, and I have screenshots of it I could send you and explain it as to why they sound so dreadfully horrible. There's a digital hash out starting about 5KC, in fact, exactly 5KC to 10KC. There's a digital rebroadcast of what they're broadcasting. So it's a hell of a note. That actually comes from the station that's adjacent to them, above and below. But like I said, it's in-band on someone else's channel. Well, that's not what's happening here. What you're hearing probably are operators who don't have their radios set up properly. Then the last possibility, which is less likely, but it is possible too, it's your radio. It's possible for a perfectly excellent signal to go out and say 10 kilohertz bandwidth, and if your receiver can only pick up 2.4, it's going to pick up the bottom 2.4. And some of these high fidelity transmissions are balanced, the treble, the mid-range, and the bass. But if your radio is only able to pick up the bottom sector, the bass, it might sound muddy to you, even though it's not. If the radio receiving has the ability, that's the problem. Usually, when I transmit and I switch, people can't even tell a difference. That's the usual setup. The only thing is they don't benefit from, the added high frequency response, but it is conceivable. So that's the short version story for over the air. But really, I will be happy to explain the whole evolution of that to you on the phone and to IRJ.
Okay, Marty. Well, I appreciate that explanation there. And to IRJ and the group, this is KK4WX right back. Well, You know, I don't know if it's my receiver or not, but it's not just this radio. I guess it's my other radio too, because they're older transceivers. Anyway, I don't know. I just know what I hear, and it sounds like some of them. Maybe they call them high fidelity. I don't know, but they sound like they're literally growling. So I sort of have a growling sound, and they don't sound bad if they've got a real strong signal. But if it gets down a little, if it's a low signal, and they've got that thing tuned that way, to me it doesn't sound that way. And by the way, your signal doesn't sound like the I mean, yours has never sounded that way to me, and Vic's has never sounded that way. Steve's has never sounded that way, and so is Larry's here. I mean, I've never heard anybody here that sounded the way I'm describing there. So anyway, KK4WX.
Well, you are giving me important feedback, and I will say to you that right now I'm transmitting about 1,000 hertz more than what your receiver is able to receive. There are shortwave radios these days able to receive in better fidelity, and what you can do is adjust it according to band conditions. And that's what I do. I roll with the punches. Most of the time, band conditions are average. And say 4,000 hertz is a good trade-off, you know, for the signal-to-noise ratio. And if conditions get extraordinarily bad, I knock it down to 3,000 hertz. And if conditions are excellent, going to 10,000 is child's play. Some of these radios go to 30,000. Mine goes to 20,000. The trade-off I usually hit off, I've done testing with people, is about 7,500 because of the signal-to-noise ratio. However, if conditions are very enhanced, then there is no real problem at all with going beyond that. Although in the human voice, there's very little energy on sibilance that goes above 10,000. I can ever so slightly notice a difference of restriction even at 7,500, but it's so close, and for the added advantage of having a better signal-to-noise ratio because of the tighter bandwidth, it seems to be about the sweet spot for operating when conditions are ideal. But anyway, you ought to tell me where to listen. If you know these amateur radio operators, I'll go there and listen and analyze their signals. I have the ability to do that. I was a few days ago down on the FAUX, F-A-U-X, LibertyNet on 3843. Those guys operating into the single sideband, window at 3845 that's been established for longer than I've been alive, single sideband, the slow scan TV window that's been designated to be, they don't respect that, and they just clog it up, and they carry on for hours. They have an internet stream, too. They copied what I did years ago with the LibertyNet when I used the two Apple computers daisy-chained, and 24 hours a day I'd put my recordings on loop-de-loop so people could hear, and of course I made the recordings and did the streaming. But anyway, in recent years, they copied that system. They have an online SDR, software-defined radio, where you can go to their website and listen in. And on it, it has the ability to adjust the bandwidth. For example, there's a station there, KI4THX. He runs ESSB in 6 kilohertz, and his fidelity is pretty well balanced. It's nothing stellar, but it's certainly far superior to conventional SSB. So when I listen on their online receiver, I open it up to about 6, and I can still perfectly hear everyone else who's under 3, but it allows him to come through, and I can appreciate the fidelity. So it's pretty nice. However, that particular online SDR seemingly There's some kind of defect in the audio. The other day, at least, there was. No matter how carefully I tuned it, and I'm talking 1 hertz increments, which is below what the human ear can usually hear, unless it's off a couple at least. I could not get it to be non-distorted, and that was for everybody's signal, not just this KI4THX. So he's the equivalent kind of to Vic. He's the sort of the net control, or at least the dominant presence there. So anyway, I think that's an algorithm for what used to be there, the Possum Net, where they used 3843. And when Mikey moved on, I guess they took over the frequency and they kept up the bad practice of invading the established slow scan TV window there. And they have music jammers on them. They have people blowing in the microphones. It's reminiscent of the old Liberty Net. It's a nutty place. And so anyway, if you tell me where you hear this, unless it was sort of fleeting, you couldn't, you know, you'll just sort of had a passing by experience. But if over time you can tell me a certain net, a certain time, I'll analyze it. I want to know, and I want to get back to you and explain to you what's happening. And finally, just because they have an advanced radio, it doesn't mean that they're on frequency. They could be LIDs. They could be off, and the distortion has nothing to do with your radio. It's them. They're not operating it properly. N2IRJ.
Marty?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, just so you know, I'm detecting you past the band edge. You're over in around 4,000.7. I'm actually picking your signal up out that far with this 830. And as far as extended single sideband ESSB, on a crowded band, I find that to be problematic, mainly because what it does is it really hogs the band space. And when single sideband was introduced, I know that there were big battles between the AMers and the single sidebanders. But eventually single sideband won out, and the reason was because it allowed for more people to cram on to the 80-meter and the 160-meter band and all the other bands for that matter. So, you know, on a night like tonight, you know, extended single sideband is fine, but when you're dealing with a crowded band condition, it can really, really get under people's nerves. And nonetheless, your radio always sounds good. I'll say that. But I just want to let you know that you are out of band.
Well, you're wrong. It turns out you had mentioned this before, and I sort of didn't get back to you on it. I let you go on with that belief, but now I will explain. It turns out this has been tested, especially after you made the first allegation. And it has to do with the steepness of your skirts. They're not vertical. They're not like what my SDR has. And when you tune up to 4,000 hertz, you think you're there, or even in your case, 4,007 hertz, but because your skirts are not vertical, they're, let's pretend, a 45-degree angle, you're going to get some of the energy. And this is especially going to be the case when the signal is powerful. And you and I do have conduits to each other, and you get me strong. So I know that's the case. I had the opportunity, even though I was pretty sure anyway from my readings here, to hear my signal on my own radio from distance, near Ohio, by Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it wasn't just an audio recording. It was the actual wave file of the entire spectrum. So I could see and hear and tune anyway to either confirm or deny your allegation of exceeding 4 kilohertz. And it turns out to be totally untrue. Now, what is true is there might be, a half a watt or something up there, which is totally normal. I mean, if you look at the FCC specs too, which aren't all that good, there are, you know, specifications on the drop-off out of band. But, you know, that would be normal if you were receiving that. But the way you're describing it to be so intense, that leads me back to what I originally said about your radio. I have the ability here to go with varying steepnesses. It makes my ability to move in the band more restricted. But right now, I actually have it throttled back to a medium setting, one from the tightest. So if you're receiving me now that way, that really confirms. The test I did with Pittsburgh, I put it at worst case scenario. I put it at the least steep skirt possible. And even under that condition, I didn't even come close to reaching what you had alleged. So finally, too, Larry, I want to say, don't confuse wider bandwidth with distortion. Two different entities entirely. When you have, let's say, 4 kilohertz of bandwidth, and you are a good neighbor and stay within your 4 kilohertz, that's fine, that's beautiful, you don't hurt anybody. But if you over-modulate or do other undesirable operating practices, you can end up splattering your signal out of your passband. You know, sometimes Steve refers to this as being wide. That's not true either. It's not wide at all. Wider would be if you intended and you transmitted in 5 kilohertz or 6 or something. What you are is you're dirty. You're generating intermodulation distortion. It can be in the passband, out of the passband, or both. Usually I see it both ways when people operate their rigs improperly. So anyway, as time goes on, I can explain all this more, but that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of it. Over.
Hey, Marty, this is Russell.
I meant to say Russell, sorry.
Yeah, Marty, I just went down, like when Steve mentioned that, and just for the heck of it, now I'm like Steve now, you sound good to me, you know, when I'm on frequency, but I took my RIT, RIT, and I can see how many, you know, when I go down a KC or whatever, and I went down to 92 on the money, and I could hear your signal still growling down there. So, you know, why that is, I don't know. Maybe it's the 940 receiver here, but 940s are old radios, but they're known to be pretty good old radios. But I'm not saying you're wide. I don't know what it is, but I do hear your signal growling down there, like he said. Over.
Hey, Marty.
Yeah, I'll pick you up a second, Steve. It turns out that it's the same scenario as for Steve. Your radio doesn't have sharp off-the-cliff skirts, so it's especially intensified by the fact that I'm not restricting myself to 2,400 hertz. Right now I'm set to 3,500. So you're going to get a little extra, and when you deal with the skirts that aren't sharp like mine, you're going to experience that. And also, as for Steve mentioning above the 4KC hearing my signal, that's exactly the wrong direction to be testing. I mean, it's legitimate to do so, of course. You don't want to be on either side. But that would mean poor upper sideband suppression. And I certainly don't have that. And what Russ did, his test has a little bit more significance, because at least you can make a determination as to what the bandwidth might be. If you have a notion of maybe how your skirts drop off, you can maybe get some idea. But as for the upper test, like Steve did, the 4,000 hertz and above, that really really does prove that it's a problem on the receiver's end about the skirts going off at like a 45-degree angle. Yes, Steve, come on back.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm not. You know, I'm not accusing you of anything, or, you know, making accusations or anything. I mean, you do what you want to do. That's fine. But what I'm saying is I never have that. And Vic's signal here is usually 40 to 50 over most of the time. I mean, he just pounds in here, and his signal is awesome. And as is yours. Yours is a little bit less, around 30, 35. I never have that problem with Vic. I can go up and down the band. I did that with you. I also went down. And I noticed that you are wider than the, you know, the 3 kilohertz. So what I'm just saying is that extended single sideband is wide. It has to be in order to accomplish what it needs to do. It doesn't matter about my skirts on my radio. It matters what the FCC regulations are. If you have problems with being wide, well, that's a problem. It's not because of my receiver. I mean, if Russ has the problem and I have the problem and other people notice the problem, which may not even be a problem, I'm just, you know, just mentioning this, that's all. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. What I'm just saying is I just wanted to make you aware that I could hear you past the band edge. And I hear a lot of guys that are going up on, like, say, for example, 3998, and even with a standard single sideband, they're still past the band edge, but they continue to do it. You know, I just wanted to make, if it ever does come down, I don't want to see you getting into trouble with the FCC. You know, believe me, I've had my problems with them, and it's not a pleasant situation. Of course, you've had yours also. So, but I just wanted to make mention of that. That's all. It's not a problem. I just wanted to mention it because, you know, it is detectable up there. It doesn't matter about my side skirts on my filters and all this other stuff.
Well, I'm glad you don't want to see me have problems with the FCC. They were here and they checked all that. When they go over the station, they put you on the defensive with a fine-tooth comb. They were actually impressed with my uncommon clean signal, and their machinery is far superior to what you have. So, along with what I already stated, I'm glad you recategorized it as not being a problem. It is not. That was good to retract that statement. You know, in the past, you've made some mistakes too in what you've said. Downband, when we had to have a Liberty Net there, Vic was accused of splattering. And I wasn't about to get in there and contest it. And you got on there and said, Vic, you're just perfect and all. Well, guess what? It was a continuation of what was happening in that era of his signal being out of the passband. And worse yet, it wasn't ESSB. It's not like he was operating 10 kilohertz wide. He was operating 2,400 kilohertz wide, but he was splattering in band and out of band big time, 10,000 hertz. Now, he saw the same screenshots as you did, but he understood them. You didn't. And you chalked it off as being, oh, Vic's just a little extra wide. No, two totally different scenarios. Wideness and intermodulation distortion out of band are two entirely different things. Being wide, that's fine. It passes legitimate intelligence. But intermodulation distortion is just that. It's pollution in the street and also out of the street being the passband. So above and below 3KC, there's growling, there's clicking, chirping, scraping, all of that. And it's not recoverable into intelligence. It's also a waste of energy. You know, Vic, you were saying his signal is 40 dB over on your meter. He might be 42 dB over if he could recover the wasted energy out of the passband and put it back in the passband. So I really do need to explain to you the technical aspects that maybe you picked up a half-baked understanding from other operators on the air, but when it comes to Kevin, me, a few other people, for example, the FCC, they understand all this. In fact, they even took an Apple iDevice and they photographed it, made a video, not just the audio, because they were so impressed with this. The guy had heard about these radios, but until he saw it analyzed on their planar, and I forget the other device they had where they could analyze my signal too, they commended it immensely. So what do you think of that, Steve? N2IRJ.
No, like I said, it's not a problem. I just wanted to make mention that I was able to hear you above 4,000, that's all. So, like I said, you run your station as you see fit, and I have no problem with that at all. But, like I said, when Vic was having his problem, I say that with quotation marks, he was intelligible. I could understand everything he was saying. It wasn't a problem for me. Okay, maybe he was flattering. I didn't see the screenshot. I didn't see it. So I couldn't really make an uneducated comment on it other than saying that I was able to hear him. So that was my only contention, that he seemed fine to me as far as the audio goes. I didn't have a problem with what he was doing there and his signal or anything else. I was able to actually discern intelligence. I was able to hear what he was saying and get the ideas behind his ideas. I mean, he was actually describing things that I could understand because he wasn't distorted. I didn't have a problem with it. So that's the only reason why I made that comment. I says, okay, maybe someone else is hearing something that I didn't hear. I'll admit that. Maybe that was the case. I don't know. But like I said, these issues with the, you know, the FCC and everything else, I just wanted to make people aware that I was hearing things and, you know, take it as you wish. I mean, I'm not, like I said, I'm not criticizing anybody or anything like that. I just wanted to make the comment. And as far as extended single sideband goes, like I said, in a crowded band, it's not a wise thing to do. I prefer the single sideband notion of having a lesser width on the signal because it's not as, shall I say, frequency hungry as the extended sideband. Amateur radio is meant to be just for communication. It's not to be made to sound like an FM, although I do enjoy listening to it, especially on the AM portions of the band. That's another issue altogether. And like I said, I've never had a problem with your signal or with your audio quality or anything. It's always been very good, except when the, of course, when your machine crashes. But such is the nature of the beast. And maybe if you get yourself one of those 6000 series and get away from the computer, maybe then you'll have a radio that'll be a little bit more reliable as far as all the problems that you've been having where you had to reboot and stuff like that. Believe me, I know about those radios. I have friends that have them. They've got the 5000, they have the 3000 and the 1000 or the 1500 or whatever it was, and they were always rebooting their computer for some reason or another. So they're excellent radios, though. I cannot say anything bad about the software-defined radios. They are by far, I would say, superior to the knob and button radios. So, but anyway, that's just it. I've got to go because it's 1:30 in the morning. I've got to get up early and have some fun. So W1WCR N2IRJ and everybody else that's out there, Russ down there in Georgia, and also Larry, I will say 73s from NHWGM.
Well, if Vic's going to pick it up, maybe he can on the outgo mention that what IMD is. And once again, you are confusing that with bandwidth, and they're totally separate entities. And I operate in a rational way based upon conditions. I have the flexibility. I have that sports car. And if conditions are appropriate, it makes a nice highway cruiser. But yet, if conditions are not, I can make the bandwidth appropriate, and one such condition is when there's a lot of static. To get a better signal to noise ratio, I can narrow the bandwidth, and damage my fidelity, pierce through with what some people use, clipping, and all that. But the reason I think that you don't still grasp what I'm trying to say is because Vic himself, the one that the finger was pointing at, in no demeaning way, of course, we're all here to help each other, and I know you're trying to help me too, and give me feedback, and I do appreciate that, I always want feedback, but anyway, Vic's actual word to me was, it was alarming. Alarming was the word he used to describe the image that I sent. The same image you saw, and the same image some others saw, and you said that you heard it. Well, did you hear it well? If you did, then apparently you don't have a discerning ear. My ear is what picked it up first, and only secondarily did I confirm it with the screen. I really should have had the screen on first and saw it, but I was, in other places doing other things. And then when I saw how bad it was, that's when I did what you did here for me. I mentioned it to Vic, but Vic understood the scenario. Next time we chat, I want to hear about what the FCC did to you, unless you're able to chat about it now on the going out. I'll turn it back to you and then over to Vic, just in case you want to quickly mention whatever happened. Why did the FCC get on your back?
Well, it was my allegations about jamming by a certain station. And I got a warning letter from Riley Hollingsworth and a few other things. And I don't want to go about it over the air because I was told not to a long time ago. This is back in the 90s. So, and I don't want to bring it up again because who knows, the guy that might still be out there listening or whatever. But I did have a run-in with him. And, you know, as a matter of fact, you know, the situation was I was more interested in what Vic was saying than the quality of his audio. I was paying more attention to that than to the fidelity of his, you know, of his transmission. It was more about what he was saying than how he was saying it. So that's what it came down to. I mean, worst case scenario, yeah, he's, you know, okay, if it was a problem and he got it fixed, that's great. But I didn't see a major issue. It wasn't like, you know, with Vern, for example. I hear Vern talking and I notice that there is a problem. When GNQ gets on and his batteries are running low, that's a problem. I would like to hear what he has to say, but a lot of times he gets that raspy, breakup and all that stuff, and that's a problem. But with Vic, I didn't see the problem. I just wanted to hear what he had to say, because that's more important anyway. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, as far as fidelity goes, yeah, you know, I mean, like for tonight, for example, hearing your audio, it's excellent. I mean, I'll come right out and say it. You know, I don't see a problem with it because the band's not crowded. But when the band is crowded, and having that extra wide extended audio, it can be an issue, especially with other hands. Sometimes it attracts attention. You know, there's a lot of people that... Of course, you know, it goes back to the days of the AM and the single sideband guys. You know, now it's single sideband versus extended audio, extended single sideband. So, you know, that's what it comes down to. And you have to deal with not only radio theory, but you also have to deal on ham radio with psychology. And that's what it comes down to. When you start, hogging... a wide swath of frequency because, you know, you want to sound good. Well, when it's crowded, that's a problem. When it's not crowded like tonight, it's not. And, but that being said, you know, people will run their stations. I have no power over that. And in all reality, I don't really take too much interest in it, to be honest with you. If the band's crowded and I can't get on, I don't get on, and I just walk away because I've got better things to do. So, but anyway, that's it for me. I will say 73s to all. Enjoyed it this evening. W1 WCR N2IRJ, and all the rest. Russ and Larry and whoever else is out there. This is NAWGM. I will see you later.
If talking about the FCC matter is not to your advantage, then I agree, don't say it over the air. However, if they intimidated you and you're not speaking because of that, I personally don't let them intimidate me. I speak freely. I've communicated by email to Riley Hollingsworth, even in recent times. And when he sees fit, he replies, and when he doesn't, he ignores me. So anyway, I don't let them control me. And as far as legal operation, it's illegal to not utilize good engineering practice. And having 10 kilohertz of intermodulation distortion is illegal. My 3.5 kilohertz is not illegal. However, both act as chase planes. There's actually some benefit to that. When you have people during LibertyNet trying to cozy up and invade the passband, Vic's signal and my signal help the cause. The difference is my signal is perfectly legal. Now, I really don't like having to portray Vic in some negative way because he doesn't deserve that at all. And he did. The problem was rectified. It was a bug, but we never really quite could identify. But, boy, at the time, he saw the screenshots too, and he responded appropriately. He used the word alarm. So if he said it, and he's the expert in radio, then maybe you'll believe it. You might not believe me, but you might believe Vic. So I'll pass it over to Vic and the rest so they can say 7-3 to you. Good talking, Steve. Glad we had the QSO on that. Over to you, Vic, from N2IRJ.
Okay, this is W1WCR. Well, to begin with, your audio is excellent. It's wideband, and I can pick it up 4.4 kilohertz away from the carrier frequency. You can hear quite a bit of rumble at 4.4. And this 870 has fairly steep skirts, so it's a fairly valid measurement, I believe. Anyway, it sounds good, and I guess if the band is crowded, you'll just shrink it down to 3 or 2.8 or whatever, over.
What I do is establish presence. Because of FCC rules, it's who's there first and what mode they're in, and everyone else then has to secondarily work around that. So when I start a Librient, I establish my footprint at a particular bandwidth, and I keep it there. And that way, if someone invades that, then they're the ones in violation of FCC rules. Over.
Okay, so you sort of develop a method of warding off the side swipers.
Yeah, I learned from the best, the man himself who coined that phrase, side swiper.
Yes, well, side swipers have to be dealt with.
That sounds a little odd to me, but I'll take you for what you're saying. Anyway, I tell you what, it sounds good. I mean, I don't have no problems with your signal, Marty. I don't want you to think I ever said that. And I was kind of curious on that SDR radio you got there. Can you look at my signal and tell what it looks like? This is KK4WX for ID.
Yes, I can, and I'll be glad to report back. In fact, in time, I could take a screenshot and email it to you so you can see for yourself. You're totally within the passband. Your profile is much like a mainstream radio, whereby there's nothing wide. You weren't overly narrow like Vern was. It's appropriate. You mentioned, this is new to you, and you said it sounded odd. Well, new concepts are just that, unknown initially, and then after they become understood, they're not odd anymore. But, you have apparently a feel for more than just CB-like communications. And the reason I say this is in your email to me, I think it was, you mentioned that you heard on my recording some blower noise in the background. A CB-er wouldn't have even acknowledged that. When Vic transmits and when I transmit, we have a decent signal-to-noise ratio regarding background noise. So the fact that you were cognizant of that, I credit you, and I can give you even exact figures on that. For example, the floor noise floor is like an S4. When you open your mic up and there's the blower going, it's S8. And when you talk, it goes up to about a 5 over. So from that, I can make a decibel calculation of the signal to noise ratio. Vic runs his microphone high enough, but he close talks it enough that he doesn't have any significant degree of background blower noise. And that's actually advantageous. It's a good thing. But, your signal is certainly decent. But over time, if we work together, we could make it even better. And the one thing I'm speaking of, what you mentioned yourself already about the blower noise. So, yeah, there's no defect at all observable on your signal. What we're talking about, hell, I could send you a screenshot of what looks good, what looks bad. But the first test is my own ear. Even before I see it showing up on the panoramic adapter, I can hear that something's wrong. And over time, if you work with audio, you sort of grow into it, you get used to it, and you sort of can hear things, I guess, like maybe a concert pianist can hear things that I can't hear and I don't understand. Over.
Yeah, well, okay, Marty. In 2 hour, yeah, in the group. This is KK4WX. Well, I know I got that blower noise in the background. I got this Dentron clipper to nail right here just behind the microphone, and I don't have a lot of room here to position the microphone further away from it. I wish I did. And it's got one of those old box fans, you know what I'm talking about, and they run wide open, and it is a little bit noisy. And as a result, I, you know, listening to my signal on your recordings, I can definitely hear that roar in the background, and it is annoying to me. I wish it wasn't there. And I could probably get some of it out. I've got one of these, what is this thing called? It's a W2IHY8-band equalizer or something like that. Anyway, I had that thing in line one time, but I got tired of worrying about it and this and that. But it's got a noise gate on it, and it'll knock it out until you modulate through the microphone, and then whatever's, you know, mixed in with your voice, you might hear that a little bit. But other than that, when I pause, like I am now, I'm on push to talk, and when I pause and my words, in between my words, of course, you can hear that floor noise, like you said, and I can't eliminate that the way I am now. But with that W2IHY deal, this 8-band equalizer, I might be able to. I've been thinking about buying myself another microphone when I can think I can afford it. I was thinking about one of those Howl PR, it wasn't a PR40, it was that other one. It's a black microphone, but I can get one for a little bit under $200, I think. And I was thinking about getting one of those and putting it in this thing up here, this microphone. I don't know what you call this. This arm that's got a microphone, you know, holds a microphone, a shock mount, and all that. And then maybe rigging up something like that where I can pull it away from this linear, and maybe it would make it a little bit quieter. And I might plug that W2IHY 8-band equalizer back up. So, but anyway, I appreciate all the help, Marty. I really do. I want to sound good. I don't want to sound all trashy, and you know, nobody wants to sound that way. Anyway, appreciate all the help. KK4WD.
Roger. I just took a screenshot of you, and you'll be pleased. You look real nice. You're tidy within your passband, and you sound good too. I had time to analyze your local signal-to-noise ratio from your ham shack. You're almost 40 decibels signal-to-noise ratio. That's decent on amateur radio. You are hitting a tad over a 10 over S9, and the noise floor here is S4. Your first 24 decibels is noise. When you don't speak and you're just having the open mic in your room because of the noisy blower, you're registering an S8, even though the noise floor is only an S4. So the first four S units is just pure noise. Then on top of that, from S8 to 10 over S9, is your modulation. And so altogether, your 40 dB over the noise floor, but you're only... the first 24 dB is eaten up by noise. So that would mean that only 16 dB of your audio is actually being effective over the noise. So if you could improve that, that would improve you immensely in the way you sound. I'll say this, you know, my human ear is not considering it to be bad. I mean, I've heard over the years some people who have downright offensive fan noise, blower noise, but aesthetically, it is better to not have it be present. There are two ways to fix it. One is at the source, and that's the hard way. Move it to another room, remote control, put a quieter fan in, use that approach along with acoustical damping material. The other method is to reduce your microphone gain and talk more closely to the microphone, and also utilize a directional microphone, one that has its favorable lobe towards your mouth, and it will attenuate noise from other places in the room. In fact, if you combine all three approaches, that will really make it quiet. Some guys who are trying to get around the problem but not really attack the root cause, they use noise gates, but they're artificial sounding. After a certain level of audio, it cuts out, and there's an artificiality to it big time. You know, your blower noise will be there, and then all of a sudden it'll cut out. It'll be like you're on Vox. Or they can use something a bit more elegant called a downward expander. There, it proportionally decreases more with respect to how much it goes lower. So it's more of like a volume control, fading it out, turning a potentiometer. It's like the noise gate, but it does it in a more discreet way. But even that is not to the liking of an audio purist. The audio purist would say, make it clean in the first. Don't corrupt it with noise gates or downward expanders. So that's the scoop on that, Russ. N2IRJ.
Okay, Marty. Well, that's reasonable to me. It sounds exactly about right. Well, I appreciate all the, like I said, all the explanation, and I appreciate you looking at my signal and sort of analyzing it there, too. Yeah, I knew I had this problem with the fan noise, no doubt, but hopefully it's not too objectionable, and people can tolerate it for whatever it's worth. So we'll try to work on it. And I know what you mean about the close talk in the microphone. I actually am close talk in the microphone. I'm probably, I don't have my lips touching the grill, but I'm probably about maybe an inch and a half, maybe something like that from the head of the microphone. And I don't know if this old Shure 526T, I know it's an amplified mic, so I don't know if it's omnidirectional or not. It may be, but anyway, it's just an old microphone. It's been around a long, long time. And like I said, it is amplified. I put a fresh 9-volt battery in it tonight. I was telling Vic way earlier in our conversation there. So, but I got a Shure. Another Shure microphone up here I used to like a lot. I actually like it better than this one because it doesn't take a battery. It's just a non-amplified. It's what they call a 444 D. A D stands for dual impedance. I can switch it for high or low, and it seems to. I can wire that thing up for any. I hadn't seen a radio yet that it won't wire up to high or low Z. It doesn't matter. You can switch it down at the bottom of it, and I really like that microphone, and I think it produces a good audio quality. But anyway, I'll back out and let these other guys have a go at it. I'm fixing to have to call it quits myself like Steve. So, Larry, you still in here? Go ahead. This is KK4WX.
Yeah, I'm still in. I thought I'd hang in here and say hello to Marty before I took off, and Vic. You guys are all sounding good, and enjoyed tonight, and hope we can do this more often. The band is great tonight, and thanks for everybody getting in here. So, Marty, hope you're doing okay up there, buddy. You are sounding good down this way, and I've understood the conversation, and I understand what everyone's saying. I don't see a problem. You're sounding fine. So just hope I'm getting up there. Just comparing my signal with just to signal with Russ. Is am I getting anywhere close to signal up there? Russ is putting on you.
You are. It's amazing. Right now, I took a screenshot of you. You're 8 over S9. Russ made it to a momentary peak of 12 over S9. Most of the time, he was roughly a 10 over S9. So you're very similar. He is stronger. Keep in mind, he is running amplification, but your antenna must be working. I, by the way, just took a screenshot about 90 seconds ago of your signal, so I could email you on that. Maybe I'll email you both, and you'll be able to see. Although it might be unimpressive or not exciting because everything is so bread and butter perfect. I mean, I'm seeing here your low cutoff. Is well above where the F sub zero is, the 3995. It looks like there's maybe a good 300 hertz. That's typical. Not that that's necessarily desirable for full fidelity, but for communications grade audio, it is. Your upper looks like if you do have a 2700 hertz radio, then it's okay. You're making it just about up to 3000 hertz. If you're running a 2.4 kilohertz radio and it's up that high, then some of it is distortion. But I don't see that. I don't hear it. You sound fine to me, and I don't see anything out of band. Ever so slight rise on the upper sideband. It's so insignificant, it's not even worth reporting. Is it your signals? Beautiful, Larry. N2IRJ.
Processor on, so it may be doing a little bit of something there, maybe a little better probably than it has to be. But anyway, guys, I appreciate it. I think I need to get on out too, and got a lot of stuff to do tomorrow. And y'all take care, Russ and Steve. I know Steve's taking off, but if he's still listening in, I enjoyed it. Getting in here tonight, enjoyed it all. So we'll jump on out, Marty and Vic. Y'all be careful and catch y'all later. N4LK, appreciate it there, Marty, for doing what you did there.
Well, thanks for giving me thanks, and I pass it over to Vic.
Still in there or not, Marty, but anyway, I'm going to sign and say 7-3 is the one and all, Steve, if he's still in, and same to you, Larry, good hearing you, and this is way past my bedtime, but guess what, I don't have to go to work in the morning, so that's always a kind of neat, and then I got a 4-day weekend with the Memorial Day coming up Monday, so hope everyone has a good Memorial Day weekend coming up, and enjoy the festivities, whatever they are, and wherever they are, and may the Lord take a liking to you. So with that, 7-3s, thanks, Marty, for the explanation. You done real well, and maybe I can get with you sometime, and I might plug this 8-man equalizer deal up, and might be able to make this thing even sound better and cut some of the noise out of the background, but I don't think I'm going to be able to get rid of it until then. It's going to be real difficult for me to relocate this amplifier to a different location. So 7-3s, guys, and have a good night, or good morning, I should say. Dang, it's almost 2 o'clock here. N2IRJ, W1WCR, N4ROQ, and N8WGM. This is KK4WX, now clear. Good night.
Good night, Russ, and spend a day or two and catch some fish.
I might do that, my friend.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Before you run, Russ, did you guys just kind of meet up here? And if so, when? I didn't get a FlashNet notice. Over.
No, I don't think anybody, I actually came on frequency and I was trying to adjust my mic gain and processor levels and things to get it right. And, the only thing I can do is just look at the meter in the front of the face of the panel of the radio and try to make sure I've got the, it says when you adjust the processor in control, you're supposed to be on the compressor part of the meter, and you're not supposed to go over 10 dB when you're speaking into the microphone. And then when you adjust in the processor out control, this has got an in and out, whatever that is, I don't know. But my other radios have never had a dual control on it before, but this 940 does. And then you flip it over to the ALC and you adjust the processor out control to stay within the ALC zone. So with that and the new battery and the microphone and all, I was just, testing, that kind of thing. I don't even have a dummy load. I should have. And then Vic came on frequency and I just happened to pick up conversation and we started talking. So that's how we all got started tonight there, Marty, over.
Oh, yeah, when was that? When did you start? What time?
Good grief, I'm not even sure. It may have been around 10 o'clock or maybe 10:30 or so, Marty, over.
Okay, so you guys were going several hours before I showed up.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, we've been... We hashed over a lot of subjects, mainly bad, how things are when we get on the Liberty Net. It was kind of like an impromptu Liberty Net there, or?
Yes, too bad I didn't find you guys sooner, but I at least got to chat with you some. And I'll say 7-3 since you're heading off, and you're a lucky one not having to go to work tomorrow, but you've earned it. You've lived long enough. You deserve it, and you work hard anyway, the things you do, and also that fall you took, oh God, I hope you're on the mend from that. Falls can be vicious. In fact, over time, that ends up being the number one killer of people taking falls in their homes. And I tell my wife we have to be so careful. We're going from the second floor here down to the first. We have stair steps, which are long, and even in our young years, like once at least, it was inevitable. I ended up at the bottom, and so did my wife. You know, you trip, you're half asleep in the middle of the night, and maybe turn the wrong way or something. And oh, baby, you get a rude awakening at the bottom.
Roger. Yeah, I fell. When I fell, I actually fell out of the back end of my truck. I was stepping off of the tailgate, and so this really didn't happen at my job, but I've got a few beehives, and I was working some of those, and I had some things in the back of my truck, and anyway, the tailgate of it up is so high, I keep a little metal folding chair in the back of it, and so I slide that out and fold it out, and I usually step up in that chair and step up on my rear of my tailgate and go up in the truck and slide things out and stuff like that. And that's what I was doing. I was already up in my truck. And when I came to get out of it, I put one foot on the chair and everything was fine. And then when I went to lift my other foot off of the tailgate and transfer it to the chair also with my other foot, I guess it must have been more pressure on one edge of the chair, and it just flipped right out from up under me, and I just went straight to the ground on my back. So I don't know. I got a couple of herniated discs or something in my neck is what my orthopedic surgeon told me today, and he's going to refer me to a spinal doctor there, or whatever you call him there, spinal surgeon, and he said it should be an easy fix, but In the meantime, it sure is painful, Marty, so there you go. It wasn't job-related, but I have worked hard all my life. I've had very, very strenuous type of lines of work and whatnot, so one of these days I hope to retire. I'm 57, and I should have been retired. If I'd have stayed at the job that I'm at now, if I'd have stayed there the whole time, I would have done been retired, but unfortunately, I veered off in the other avenues and stuff, and so wound up going back to work where I went to work originally 30 years ago, or over 30 years ago, and now I'm back there again, so, but one of these days, I'll finally get this stuff over with. 7-3's, Marty, enjoyed it, and all the best to you and yours. Into RJ from K4WX Southern Georgia.
I enjoyed it too, and as for the back injury, I've been there actually at a young age. It was the first time it ever happened to me, and my father taught me, he said, you do not want to keep re-injuring it. You know, the back is the weak spot of the human body, and boy, I'll tell you, if you want to know pain, you don't know it until you have a back injury. And I've, like I said, been there, and I have to make sure I don't revisit that. It's a vicious circle. You know, you have the back pain that causes spasmodicity, which ends up contorting the spine even more, thereby making the nerves fire worse. It increases the pain, not to mention the inflammatory response, worsening it too. And then that makes more pain, which makes more spasmodicity, and it just goes round and round and round. You need to break that cycle, and it's a hell of a note. Wish you well with that. 7-3, and I'll say again, if Vic is here, I hope he's here. He maybe got chased away. I hope he didn't. He'll get to say 7-3-2. So take it easy there. Speak with you again soon. Bye, N2IRJ, and over to Vic if you're around. And if you're not around, I still turn it over to you. Wasserman Schultz, back to you. Nighty night, or should I say good morning?